Hi, everyone. This is Dave Denton of Turnbuckle Trash. And before we start today's podcast, I will tell you that we are inspired by the WWE because this podcast will not just be an ordinary podcast, because this is a premier podcast of Turnbuckle Trash.
Excellent!
This is TurnbuckleTrash.net. Pro wrestling from a fan's perspective.
I love video games and pro wrestling.
With three fans who know how to talk some trash.
None of these cross-eyed mouth breathers deserve to hear this voice.
I guess it's time to take out the trash.
Well, well, well. Welcome back, everybody. It's been too long. I am here with the man with the plan. That is the doctor of... Are you a doctor of anything, really, or...
I'm the doctor of thugonomics, just like Mr. John Cena, because you can't see me because it's a podcast, and I used to work on the radio, you know?
Yes, you have a great face for that,
Dave. I sure do.
yes, Dave's here, I'm here, and we are also here with a special guest. Okay, we're here with the special guest, not just a special guest, but the special guest. He is a man who can resist anything but temptation, okay? He is a groovy guy. He is a cool guy. We're talking about, I'll introduce everybody to the man, the myth, the legend, Bob Condor.
Hey, everybody. You sound like my mother.
So, yeah, I know.
She always builds me up too, so.
yes. So I want to give everybody a little background on Bob, and then we're going to let him give us his own background. So about a year ago, it was about this time last year, I was working for a company here in our little county of San Pete, and I got called to Bob's house. Bob had some problems with his furnace, and so I fixed him up, and he was showing me all around this pretty unique house that he has, that he's done, I mean, amazing amounts of work to this house. It's just a really cool place. I mean, so he started showing me around, and we started chit-chatting and talking, and Bob was telling me all about, he's had a long career in the film industry, and me being a movie buff and a pop culture buff, I just really I feel, anyways, maybe Bob's like, oh, heck with this guy, but we hit it off pretty good, I thought, and we've been really good friends for a little over a year now, and I've had the opportunity to help Bob, and Bob's helped me in a lot of ways. And so that's kind of a little bit of the background on how I know this fella. So I'll turn a little time over to you, Bob, and just tell us a little bit about your background. And this is going to be a little bit of a different show, just so everybody knows. We're still going to talk wrestling. We're still going to talk everything, but we're going to focus more on like on production and movies and things like that, that Bob has so much knowledge in. So I'll let you have a little bit of time, Bob, and Dave, you interrupt as you need.
Or as I always do.
Yes.
Yeah. Ask questions and clarification. I'm happy to try and resolve anything that I misguide you on. So, well, I've been in working in entertainment since I was about 12 years old. I started doing studying theater and doing readings and stuff like that, and voiceover work, even at that age. Anyway, I wound up in the movie business and spent the last 45 years making movies. I've traveled all over the world doing it. Never been a place that I haven't thoroughly loved. They all have their challenges, but you know, you just learn to overcome them, and that's a good thing. But as I went along, the one thing I really realized is that I really wanted to learn more about story. So I went back to school, and I have two business degrees, and I got my last degree is creative writing, master of fine arts with an emphasis in screenplays, which is a big long way to say that I can tell you all about stories. And for the last 15 years, I've been an adjunct over at UVU teaching both film and writing, and trying to corrupt these kids so they don't go into the business. But it's fun. You know, I've met a lot of people, a lot of very familiar names. I think the one that everybody recognizes is I actually did stunts in Dumb and Dumber.
Ooh.
So,
kind of sounds like one of our podcasts.
So does that make it Dumb, Dumber, and Dumbest? Is that me?
You guys speak for yourself.
Zane is dumb. I'm dumber. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So, Bob, we've talked a little bit, and I've been wanting to get you on the show now for a long time. Dave always laughs because I'm a broken record on the show. I just repeat this all the time. So, and everybody knows what I'm going to say. I'm going to say, I love the behind the scenes of professional wrestling. I love the storytelling. I love the live production and the lighting and the camera work and just everything that you don't know that's going on, that we're seeing on TV, but there's so much going on behind the scenes. So, Bob, maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of that stuff that, I don't know, have you ever been involved with any sporting events or any live production type of things? I know you've been worked on a lot of film sets and TV sets and things like that, but maybe you could help us understand what goes into a live production event.
Let me start by saying that when I was young, my dad used to take me up to the fairgrounds and we would watch Killer Kowalski. Was a wrestler way back when.
Yes.
And several other people, you know, I even got so excited as a 10-year-old kid. I threw my popcorn at him and booed and bought into all of the hype. You know, I was one of those fans. It was kind of funny. But later on, I actually used to announce for a wrestling group here in Mountain West. And so I was the guy on the side saying, okay, in this corner, weighing 452 pounds, you know, and go on and on. And it was kind of fun because I got a lot more behind the scenes than anything else. You know, so I've been involved in that world a little bit. The biggest thing that I think people don't really understand is that this wrestling is storytelling. It starts with all the name calling and who's going to come up and they back and forth, and that's all the first act, and then they get in the second act and they start wrestling, and then it escalates and somebody gets hurt and then somebody gets thrown out of the ring and then their buddy comes in and it just builds and builds and builds up till at the very last second our protagonist will win, and that's the finale. But pretty much every event I've ever been to follows that pattern, and that's just storytelling is innate in all of us. It's something that we're born with. It's how you educate and enlighten. But the interesting thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is how many people are involved behind the scenes. You know, you see the referee, you see a couple of people in the corners, you see the wrestlers and the girls walking around, and then this massive crowd that generally we refer to them as background, who gets really, really involved and helps sell it, all their oohs and ahs. And we as the audience actually participate in what's called microneurons, where we're physically doing the same thing. That's why when you leave a wrestling match, you're tired. It's not because you've been cheering, but because you've physically been doing the same thing that person that you're cheering for has been doing. But along with that, also, you notice that they're extremely well lit. They have big light grids above them. They have a controlled panel somewhere off in the corner where everything goes to, and they light them all up. You know, they do the light effects. It's all about building your emotion. As people come in, you know, the lasers and the spotlights go around, and that just starts building the energy, and everybody wants to peek, and that gets everybody excited, and then they get in the ring, and it's a big, highly lit, very bright area that these gladiators dance in. And they do their thing in there. But in the meantime, too, you have all these cameras. You know, generally, I'd say there's at least six, maybe eight cameras at every wrestling event. And so you have people operating those. You have somebody who's doing a live edit. as it happens, tell you which camera to go to and who they're on, and you've got somebody pulling focus. I mean, it's really a the best way I think to describe it is it's like a beehive, where you've got all these people running around and everybody's got very specialized jobs, and it really comes together. And the whole idea in that scenario is to make the queen look good and last. Well, in wrestling, it's to make the hero look good and to build up that persona. You know, so it's really a much more complex world and business than people may think. You know, it goes on and on. The funny thing is, this small company that I used to announce for, I always laugh and I'd go in, and generally it was the same guys, and I'd say, "So what's your name tonight?" You know, they weren't big enough that people actually recognized them.
Right.
"And where are you from?" You know, and I jokingly, you know, asked them, "Well, who's going to win?" And the funny one is, we had one guy, and I wish I could remember his name, but he was about 450, 500 pounds. And they would put out, they had an event where they would give $10,000 to anybody who could body slam him. And of course, all the young bucks, they wanted to try. They knew they could do it. Well, I don't care how big and bad you are, you're not going to pick up 450 pounds to do it. Well, they would. That's part of the story, because that set that up. And then you have this main match where he and this underdog were wrestling. And the underdog, at the very end of the match, when they're really tired, he'd pick him up and he'd body slam.
Right.
Uh-huh. And, you know, it was all to build it was all to tell the story and to be part of the environment that everybody gets so excited about, and to sell a lot of t-shirts and popcorn.
And Bob,
which they do.
That little story you told there reminded me of WrestleMania number 3, when Hulk Hogan body slammed Andre the Giant. In later years, Hulk was talking about that very event, and he said he was supposed to body slam Andre early in the match, and he didn't quite get it done because Andre didn't want him to do it at that point. But when towards the end of the match, when the buildup was going there, Andre gave that assist that let Hulk Hogan get that body slam in and eventually the win. And I'm sure your 455-pound man was doing the same thing because, there's an art to everything they do. But I found that very interesting.
Well, let me just add to that, because the way I understood it is that this was going to be Andre's last match.
Mm-hmm.
And he was having a hard time saying goodbye.
Right.
To the sport that he loved, to all the people. And that's why he kind of postponed what was going to happen until he finally accepted that this is it, and it took place. So
right.
Anyway.
Well, he did wrestle just a short time after that, before his death. It was supposed to be one of his last matches. I was going to ask you quickly, where did you grow up at, and where did you see, you said the fairgrounds where you'd see people like Killer Kowalski, which, that's a big name, man. That's a huge name for the old-time wrestling fans like myself. So,
well, it's funny because I grew up in Salt Lake City.
Oh, okay.
And it was the Salt Lake Fairgrounds that we'd go to. And years later, there was some guys I used to do some business with. And I just remember the one guy's name was Ed LePre, and I don't remember his brother. But apparently they had been wrestlers at one point. You know, good-sized guys in great shape. And they had some pretty wild stories to tell about all the shenanigans that they were involved in and stuff. But, it's an exciting sport to watch. It's definitely a sport that involves a lot of athletes, because these people are in great shape, not just the bulk, but the flexibility, the different moves they can do, you know, the jumping, the flipping, the grabbing, the everything. And, you know, they're athletes, what they're doing. And the whole thing is the entertainment. It's all about the entertainment. You know, they're showmen. It's great.
So, Bob, one thing that happens a lot and in the wrestling industry, and Dave, maybe you could kind of assist me with where I'm going here. There's very few, right now, currently, there's not a lot of you know, the biggest promotion obviously is the WWE, and then you have AEW, and I mean, there's a couple, small leagues, but when a live event is happening, how much more difficult is it to produce a live event versus, say, a studio event? Maybe talk for a minute, Dave, about some of these ones that we watch and maybe that are pre-recorded, and try and help me lead into this a little bit.
Well, I think what you're talking about there, Zane, is the opportunity to go back and do another cut like they would do when they're doing a film or maybe doing a TV show. When you're doing a live event, whether it's a wrestling show, a radio show like I've done in the past, or you're doing any theater or something like that, when you're live, anything can happen and often does, and you've got to be able to think on the fly. So Bob, how much training in theater, and then you're taking that back into the professional wrestling gig, how much is that preparation or just knowing which direction you want to go when something does go wrong?
Well, I think the big thing is that most things that go wrong are somebody's tired, mm-hmm. somebody slips. There's something that happens, but so much of it, you see your two wrestlers, and they get in the middle and they grab each other's head and the shoulders, and their heads are next to each other, and they're trash talking, but at the same time they're also working on what moves they're going to do. Okay, this is where you do this. This is where I do that. And it's highly choreographed, but it's live action, which mm-hmm. makes it really, really interesting to me. You know, it's like a football game. You know, this last weekend we had some great ones, and you have all these cameras just trying to catch it, and you have a group of people who are in the editing room, or editing booth, wherever it is, and they're making those cuts on the fly. And they have to be, that's why you have to have really experienced cameramen, because they look and they watch and they need to see if a guy's going to fly out of the ring, that they are in a position where they can get him hitting the ground, or if somebody grabs a chair and is going to smack somebody. You know, it's knowing where the action takes place because you've been there so long. And then being able to film that is what makes it exciting for the audience. The director and the editor, the guys who are doing the cut, they're the ones who help build the excitement. You know, all the cameras are shooting at the same time, but the director's looking at everybody and says, okay, go to one, go to three, okay, go to the overhead. And they tell you what cameras are actually being broadcast, mm-hmm. What images. And that's what helps build the excitement and still keep the control of the story narrative of what's taking place.
And then, you know, the performers themselves, and you've done a lot more theater than I have, and you've done movies and TV, but in the performance itself, things can go wrong. And I'll just give you an example that happened on All Elite Wrestling 1 week ago. A gentleman by the name of Jake Atlas, who was making his All Elite Wrestling debut, was going against one of the big stars in Adam Cole, baby. And this was on Friday night, the Rampage show on TNT, which was taped actually two nights earlier during the live Dynamite performance on TBS. Then they delayed it for Friday night. So some of the things got out on the internet that said this happened during the match. And what happened was Jake Atlas did a move and he landed wrong and just wrecked his knee. He's going to be out quite a while with a major surgery on his knee. And the wrestlers themselves have hand movements. They have where they grab them at a certain area, or they'll try to whisper to a wrestler or a referee's ear when something goes wrong. And you could actually see the point when he injured himself and the referee noticed something was wrong. He got down and Jake said something to the referee quickly. There was some sort of signal that went on to Adam Cole, who made a move off the middle turnbuckle and then slapped on a figure four leg lock that was so gentle. I mean, there was no pressure on this guy's leg at all. And that gave Jake the opportunity to tap out, and they got the storyline across that Adam Cole won, but it also let Jake have his moment in the sun. So I thought it was just brilliant storytelling on their point. That was just the last Friday night it was on TV. And Zane, I think I even sent you the video of that to saw how gentle that Adam Cole was taking care of his fellow performer. And then on this past Wednesday night, it was last night on AEW, Cody Rhodes was setting up a stunt for later in the match, and they had an incredible ladder match for their TNT title. I mean, it was as good a match you ever want to see. But early in the match, they took one of the ladders and put it between the ring and the guardrail where the fans were. And I could see Cody at one point reach over and point at one of the fans and said, "We're going to be working here, so be careful." And it was, I mean, I could see it in his mouth. He said, "Be careful." And then late in the match, they actually did a bump where Sammy Guevara climbed on top of a 12-foot ladder, stood on the top rung of the ladder where it says, "This is not a step. Don't step here. Don't do it." And then he did a swanton dive right on top of Cody Rhodes, who was on that ladder that was set up earlier in the match. And that ladder did not break, believe it or not. But that was towards the end of the match. But it was Cody looking, knowing that was going to come, but making sure that the fans were going to be okay, because who knows where those ladders are going to be going to and flying everywhere. I thought that just kind of showed that things can go wrong, but if you plan and you have the right training, that even in professional wrestling, which is a dangerous occupation, things can go wrong, but you can still take care of your fellow performers.
Well, and that's one thing, you know, you raised two points. One is the safety factor, as you want the audience to be safe as well as the performers. And these guys just don't walk in the ring having never seen each other. They have conversations. They know each other, you know, as just like any other occupation and sporting event. As you become better, you climb that corporate ladder, and you meet people along the way. And so, like when you mentioned his knee being blown out, you don't want to hurt that guy. He's your friend. You want to make it look good, and you want everybody to get their money's worth and the excitement, but you want him to be able to come back again. And so that's why those things happen like that. You know, it's some of the guys that I've known in wrestling, they've all had neck problems because of having their head piled right into the ring, you know, and it does take its toll. You know, there's not a lot of 50-year-old wrestlers out there.
No, except for Tombstone Jesus, right?
Yeah.
So one thing I'll kind of revert back just a touch to my question, and I'll hit on something that came to mind along with that verse, with the whole live thing, is a lot of promotions, and Dave, you'll know this, like NXT and Impact, and there was some in Las Vegas at Sam's Town, and they have their, like Impact used to record in Orlando, and I think they are recording in Canada now, and NXT, don't they record in Orlando, Dave?
NXT does do some in Orlando, and Impact will go between Canada and Nashville.
Okay.
Yeah.
So some of these places have set up venues and basically like static places to go where they'll do these tapings. You know, they'll do a show and they'll shoot 4 or 5 episodes. So what is the difference, and why would they do that versus go out on the road and have a live production event, all like WWE does, a live production event weekly in a different town or in a different city? So what's the difference? Just help me understand what the difference is.
It's all about the money. If you have a fixed venue that you can go in and in 2 days shoot 5, 6, 7 big events, then you have the cost of the crew, the cost of the venue, all the vendors that are there selling things, your security, the light bill, all of those things concentrated into 2 days. And so you get more filming accomplished in that time than you do if you go from event to event to location, location, location. So it's really, it's an economic decision to do that. I think myself, it's the thing that I found when I was announcing is we went, we were up into Idaho at the Indian reservation up there, and by Pocatello, and it was amazing how many people came out, but they wanted to see, they wanted to be a part of it. So to me, I think when they do it in one location, the fans kind of don't get the same experience as if they can go and see it. You know, if they can go see it, even just once a year or once every 2 years, they're going to go again and they become lifelong fans. And that's really what you want. So I think strategically from a business standpoint, you'd want to do both.
I see. It's all about the old almighty dollar. So,
well, I can give you an example with game shows. It's like Wheel of Fortune is filmed, I think it's 4 days a month, mm-hmm. and yet it runs 30 days.
Oh, because I didn't know that.
Yeah, these game shows, it's only a couple days a month that they actually film, because they film for 12, 14 hours every day. And so they stack up all of these episodes that they can string out and edit together and make it help tell the story over the course of the month. And so they're doing the same thing with these wrestling matches where they film them all, within a couple days, then they string them out.
So. I see.
And you'll see that, Zane, in our DCW promotion out of Salt Lake City. They film their shows, their once-a-month shows, and then they edit those down into other shows that will play on Fight TV, the streaming service for mixed martial arts and professional wrestling. But when you mentioned, Bob, you mentioned Wheel of Fortune, I was at a taping of Wheel of Fortune in Hollywood several years ago, and I went, I think I saw three tapings, and they switched out the audience. Then I got to say how dumb I am with spelling and everything, because we found out when the shows were going to air, and this is back in the VCR days, and my cousin, who I went with, had them record it. And then I think it was about a year and a half later on Thanksgiving, all of our families were together and we decided to go watch this taping of Wheel of Fortune that my cousin and I were at. And everybody in that room was guessing those puzzles before I was. That ought to tell you how good a speller I am. But in my defense, Bob, in my defense, I was looking around at the behind the scenes stuff. I was looking at the sound panels. I was looking at how they had their off-screen location with the used letterboard and that kind of thing. Because I was really just starting my radio career then, so I was really fascinated to be able to see how this was all set up, that theater of the mind, that the whole thing, and it was just fascinating.
Oh, I think it's wonderful, the behind-the-scenes stuff you never see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've worked on a couple of TV series. We'll have a crew of over 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the episode, there's maybe 10 that you see. You know, but it's everybody who works together. Like in the wrestling, all the behind-the-scenes stuff. Everybody that, I mean, really with those, in that world, you start with trainers and nutritionists and different workouts and different internships, if you will. That people get better and better, and they, as they go along, there's all these people training them, and then there's the people who are recording that and who are getting it all set up. You know, we always say that when we're making a movie, it's the circus will come to town one night because all the trucks pull in, and we film for a day or two, and then the next night they're all gone. And it's like a circus.
I was just listening to an interview I did several years ago, with Candy Clark, the actress who was in American Graffiti. And while we were doing this, she was talking about how they did most of the filming at night. So they would be filming at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and the winds in California would kick up and it would get very cold, but they would have to do a scene like it was the summer. And she said that there were times that she felt goose flesh on her arms while they were doing a scene with Richard Dreyfuss or with Ron Howard. And, you know, it is a lot of work putting these shows together, whether it's a movie, whether it's a TV show, or whether it's just a little remote broadcast from a radio station. You know, these things do take time because technical issues come up. Then there's a lot of equipment that's got to be set up and aimed. And there's just a lot of work that goes into doing a production.
Well, you even think of just the marketing. You're going to do a live event, even if it's, 3 days in the same place or whatever. You have to sell that. And part of the marketing is, I know in the rock and roll world that I used to be a part of too, if you were going to do a concert, you had to start announcing it 6 months in advance. Mm-hmm. And over and over again. So the marketing arm is just a totally different, another part of it. You know, this is coming up and hey, what about this? And you know, the promoters always say their names, so you get familiar with their names. Then when they bring something else along, oh yeah, we've gone to that event before. We know that person. And so that's a whole side of it too that's just fascinating to me.
I've never thought of the marketing part really that much either, but there is a lot that goes into that. But, you know, I always thought about like the staff, the WWE and the commitment that they've got to make to be able to go out on the road like that for 300 days a year. I mean, that is literally their life is that live production event.
Yeah. And it's,
and that's baffling to me that they dedicate basically that is their life. They have very little time off. They that is what they do.
Well, and one thing I've found is anybody who's in the entertainment world, the people you work with become your family because you're never spending time with your family. My wife and I have been married for 32 years now, and we're the only couple I'm aware of that both of us work in the industry and we've stayed married. You know, it really takes that kind of a toll on your relationships, no matter whether it's, theater or live events or rock and roll concerts. One time I was going to go help light Eric Clapton while he was on tour. And I got thinking about it, and it was like 9 months on the road. I just didn't want to do it. So didn't do it, because I didn't want to be away from my family that long. It is a commitment. And you're totally in your own little world there. Everybody you know is everybody that's on the bus, and that's it.
In the world of professional wrestling, you hear a lot of these wrestlers in podcasts, especially now since kayfabe is basically dead. They'll talk about how they were together in a territory or in a certain area, and they would share hotel rooms. They would share rides to and from the events. And sometime in the hotel room, they'd have 5-6 wrestlers sleeping in, with only one bed. They'd be sprawled out on the kitchen table, on the floor, in the bathtub, wherever they could lay their heads, and then they'd be driving all night to get to another town. And then you've got the people that have to set up the stages and then do all the lighting at the events and the sound equipment and the sound checks they have to go. And then at the bigger events, you'll find this on the WWE Network, Zane, that they'll go for 24 hours following how they set up for an event like a SummerSlam or a WrestleMania for one of their premier live events. They no longer call them pay-per-views. They're premier live events, but they'll follow the crowd. They'll follow the setup for 24 hours, including the wrestlers coming up to the event and going through, for a live event, a walkthrough. This is where the cameras are going to be. This is where most of your audience is going to be set. So you've got to know where you've got to know where the cameras are, especially if you're a professional wrestler, because you want most of your moves to be really shown well on the camera. And that's what the WWE does far better than All Elite Wrestling. And Zane, I've talked about that on the podcast, that AEW sometimes struggles with their director's cuts, where I think the WWE has more experience. And then the wrestlers do too. Maybe just a little bit better training at this point of AEW, which has only been in existence for 2 years. But sometimes the cuts aren't quite as smooth showing the action in the ring. And Bob, when you talked about that, that's one of the first things that came to my mind. It's fascinating to think about how this has evolved over the years.
Well, and two, you think about the, back to the economics and the coordination of that. If you have a touring group that every night they're wrestling in a different town, they probably have three or four stages and setups that they take. Mm-hmm. So because it takes so long to put them up and to tear them down that they're leapfrogging each other in order to be ready.
I never would have thought of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when the wrestlers show up. So, you know, say you have 60 people on your crew. You've now made, you're going to do a live event and you're going to do it for 2 months. You're going to wind up with over 200 people on your crew just so you can leapfrog and present those different shows and those events.
I know ZZ Top, when they did their big concert tour, a lot of stadium tours, they would have a stage that was shaped like the state of Texas. And they actually had, I think it was at least two different trucks out with just the stage, because it took almost a full day to get the stage set up with the lighting. So you had to have all those crews together, and they would do a show on a Tuesday night, say, in St. Louis. The next night, they might be in Dallas, Texas, but that Dallas, Texas show was being set up while their ZZ Top is actually in St. Louis doing a show. So there's the economics of touring, and even with WWE, the economics really get very expensive, and that's why you have your $70, $80, $100, $200 to $300 tickets, and for the premier live events, upwards of $1,000 sometimes.
Hey, you need to give us the radio voice on that one. Come on.
Okay.
This is a WWE premier live event.
Wow.
I set it up for you very well, yeah.
Yeah, that was really good.
Oh, thank you.
That almost put me to sleep, Dave. God, you could talk to sleep. Huh?
Just like I'm doing on an FM radio station at all
times. You should stretch those out, stretch those words out a little bit.
Well, if you were doing it for the very excitement, you go.
This is a WWE.
Premier live event.
This is a WWE. Premier live events.
Just like you'd be doing it live, doing that. So.
And then you'd have your echo sound effects in there, Dave.
It's all magic in the mind, theater of the mind, man.
So, okay. So one thing that I want to talk about, I mean, if I cut you off, I'm sorry, but I'm not really that sorry.
We'll take it back, Zane. You are pretty sorry, man.
Whoa, what was that all about?
We will come back with Zane and Bob Condor on this premiere podcast of Turnbuckle Trash in just a few minutes. But up next, we'll look back at an incredible AEW show. FTR praises the Rock and Roll Express. There was some wrestling love on Jeopardy this week, and we'll give some praise to a spelling bee on this. Yes, it's a premiere podcast of Turnbuckle Trash. This is a premiere podcast of Turnbuckle Trash.
Excellent!
Why are you watching wrestling?
They beat the crap out of each other.
It's great.
I bet it's all fake. Does that look fake to you?
Okay, it's nice to know something's real.
This is Turnbuckle Trash.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
All Elite Wrestling Dynamite was Beach Break this week, and it was on TBS. It was actually one of the best regular podcasts they've ever done. The show opened with a main event quality match as Cody Rhodes and Sammy Guevara had a title match for the TNT Championship. That match was a ladder match, and believe you me, it was incredible, one of the best ladder matches I have ever seen. Here is JR, Tony, and Excalibur on some incredible spots where Sammy was on top of one ladder, Cody was near the titles on a 12-foot ladder, and Guevara executed an incredible move.
Sammy! Oh, what a cutter! At least 10 feet, maybe 12. The cutter was perfectly executed. The fans here going crazy, and rightfully so.
That was an incredible opening for Beach Break that wasn't held on a sunny beach in the tropics, but was held in Cleveland, Ohio. Cleveland, Ohio, the mistake by the lake? Well, it led to a great promo by women's champion Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, who used her name, which is shared by a Cleveland Browns star, and used an old trick to get heat by using a football rivalry between two sports teams and two sports cities. Here's Dr. Britt.
Look at the year that I had. No, literally, look at it.
Match of the Year, Most Improved Female Wrestler of the Year times two, Cover Girl. The list goes on. And I told you 2021 was going to be the era of the DMD. And damn, was I right. And since the night that I won the title, I have 9 singles victories in AEW. In Cleveland, you and I share a relationship with that number. Because against the Pittsburgh Steelers, Baker Mayfield was sacked 9 times. 9 times. But wait, he was injured. He was injured. He was injured in his non-throwing arm. And I did all of this with a broken frickin' wrist.
Then the main event of Beach Break was the lights out match between Adam Cole, Bye Bye, and Orange Cassidy, which was as intense as the opening match of the night. One of the storylines over the past couple of weeks has been Adam Cole doing an uppercut right into Orange Cassidy's, let's just say, kumquats, if you know what I mean, guys. Well, Adam tried it again, but Orange was well ahead of him. When after the shot to his kumquats,
as hard as I could in his testicles,
Orange Cassidy didn't sell any kind of pain. He appeared not to be affected by the...
How could you know that was Iron Balls McGinty?
Oh, the low blow!
That's a legal move, like a headlock. Low blow's legal.
That's how Adam Cole defeated Orange Cassidy before, but...
Oh!
Cassidy came prepared!
A steel cup. Well, I've seen everything now.
There was also a surprise in the match as Cole reached under the mat to pull out a weapon at one time, only to see independent star Danhausen had been hiding under the ring. The crowd loved it, and it later got a lot of heat on social media, too.
Looking for a steel chair under the ring.
Holy hell!
Danhausen! What?
Danhausen!
Who bumped him?
What is this? I can't believe what I'm seeing!
Orange Cassidy is just as perplexed as Adam Cole.
God.
Fans can't believe what they've seen here with Danhausen making a surprise appearance.
Orange Cassidy won the match with his own shot to Adam Cole's man region.
He thought he was at the bottom there, JR. He's wrong.
Look at Orange.
He's wrong.
He snuck in the back door and get right back in the hunt.
Look at his eyes.
Oh, low blow.
Boy, I'd say that hit the mark.
And then Cassidy took himself and Cole off the scaffolding into the stage, which collapsed and got the 1-2-3.
Cassidy!
Oh, my God. Where'd they go? Where did these two men go?
They went through the staging area here.
They have crashed through the stage. The three count.
Orange Cassidy wins it. Orange Cassidy wins it.
On the Turnbuckle Trash Facebook page, Chris posted a one-minute bit from the game show Jeopardy, where one entire category dealt with pro wrestling.
Let's do wrestling for 200.
In this alliterative type of match, you need to touch your partner before you can be replaced in the ring. Bilal.
What is tag team?
Yes.
Wrestling for 600.
This beastly term can describe a powerful embrace or a move where a wrestler grabs you. Jonathan.
What is a bear hug?
Yes.
A wrestling 400?
Maintaining kayfabe means not letting on that the match is this, the word that kayfabe possibly came from with the help of Pig Latin. Bilal.
What is fake?
Correct.
Take wrestling for 800?
Perhaps a play on jobber. This Italian-sounding word is a wrestler hired to lose often. The Rock uses it as a synonym for loser. Bilal.
What is jabroni?
That's right.
Wrestling 1,000.
The name of this masked Mexican wrestling is Spanish for free fighting. Bilal.
What is lucha libre?
Correct.
Monday Night Raw even had a spelling bee as the tag champs, Alpha Academy, had an academic challenge for RK-Bro, and it was a spelling bee. Up first, the Human Tree Trunk, 4-point Otis.
Randy Orton, highly intelligent competitor. Riddle, double tough human being, but he spends most of his life in the state of Ohio, minus the O's.
As Chad Gable pointed out, this is the first of three events in which the mental aptitude of RK-Bro will be challenged.
Now, gentlemen, the first event of the academic challenge is a spelling bee. Tonight's winners will get to choose next week's challenge. We shall start with the champions, the Alpha Academy. And first up for the Alpha Academy is Otis. Otis, the word you must spell is Emmental.
Emmental. Can you use it in a sentence?
Yes, it's a form of Swiss cheese with holes in it.
Oh yeah, yep, yeah, got it. E-M-M-E-N-T-L, Edmonton!
Wow!
Okay. That is correct.
Now, the host did not give Otis a sentence. He actually gave a definition. And then listen closely again because Otis actually misspelled the word, leaving out the letter A as the next to the last letter.
Can you use it in a sentence?
Yes, it's a form of Swiss cheese with holes in it.
Oh yeah, yep, yeah, got it. E M M E N T L, Edmonton.
Wow.
And up next was Riddle, who played his character to the T. Listen to this.
RK-Bro, first up is Riddle.
Come on, Riddle.
Riddles.
Show what you got.
Number two in more ways than one.
Riddle, the word you must spell is calibration.
Calibration?
No, no. Calibration.
Can you use that in a sentence?
A simple calibration procedure is used to set up the system for individual implantation. Riddle, you must spell calibration.
Calibration. Oh, like when I calibrate my scale when I'm weighing stuff. Like ounces, grams.
Riddle, please. Just spell the word. Calibration.
Calibration. C-A-L-I-B-R-A-T-I-O-N.
Just find something that makes it work in your head.
Then it was Chad Gable misspelling his word because he spelled a similar sounding word, but did not use the correct one.
And now back across to the Alpha Academy, Chad Gable. The word you must spell, disillusion.
Deb. Oh, baby, I thought you were going to give me a challenge here tonight. I was looking forward to this. You know what? For the sake of sportsmanship, why don't you go ahead? Give me the definition.
Sure. Disappointment resulting.
Shush! I know the definition. You're looking at Mr. 4.0, baby. I don't need it. Disillusion. The disbandment of a group or an organization. Shush! I said I know the word. D-I-S-S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N. Disillusion. Oh. Thank you!
Oh, no.
That's the whole word.
No.
Chad, that is incorrect.
What?
Incorrect.
That's impossible!
You spelled dissolution. Well, I clearly said disillusion. Randy Orton, for the win for RK-Bro, your word happens to be one of the most commonly misspelled words in the English language. The word, Randy, is dumbbell.
You got this, Randy.
Randy, would you like a definition?
No. I think I'm good. dumbbell. D-U-M-B-B-E-L-L.
Yeah!
That is correct!
We have a winner!
So Arco Bro wins, and the next academic challenge will be for PE, and will be a scooter race. Otis on a scooter. That should be good.
Because you've been training for this your whole life.
The legendary tag team Rock and Roll Express are on their final tour as a tag team. And last weekend in South Carolina, that final tour kicked off with a match with AEW's FTR. Now, after the match, FTR had nothing but praise for Ricky and Robert and actually took the time to bow down to the legends out of respect for Ricky and Robert, the Rock and Roll Express.
This business is how I go home to Saluda, North Carolina, and feed my wife, feed my daughter, put a roof over their head. That's what this business does for me. And the reason that that business does that for me is because of these two. One thing, I respect you guys and I love you. One thing you will never understand, most of the boys and girls in the back will understand. The only reason myself and Cash can make a living in professional wrestling is because of Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, and the men and women like them. So, what I say to you is if tonight is the beginning of the Rock and Roll Express If this is the beginning of the Rock and Roll Express farewell tour, I have to do this one night only. Yeah! Rock and roll will never die.
After this, it's more with Zane and Bob Condor. But before we do that, if you'd like to see a story about Bob and his movie work, go to YouTube and look up Jim Carrey, Anthony Hopkins, and legendary Bob Condor. There's a story about Bob and his stunt work on Dumb and Dumber. We'll put a link on our Facebook page and also written into the intro for the podcast. You're listening to this premier podcast event of Turnbuckle Trash.
I'm Impact Wrestling World Tag Team Champion, the big LG Doc Gallows, and you're listening to the Turnbuckle Trash Podcast.
It's time to take out the trash on Turnbuckle Trash. Pro wrestling from a fan's perspective.
This isn't a social event. This is a competition where there's one winner. You don't see the Elders before a fight playing with jacks and juice boxes. No, they talk trash and they beat the crap out of each other.
This is Turnbuckle Trash.
Oh, take it back, Zane. You are pretty sorry, man.
I want to talk. So me and Bob, we've scratched the surface of this a little bit in our casual conversations. Is the budget behind some of these events? And Bob's told me you're in the middle of working on a huge project right now that's in the millions of dollars. So some of these events and some of these things that take place, these large scale pay-per-views and recordings and things like that, what is the financial obligation to something like that?
You know, it's been a long time since I've done any live events like that, so I couldn't give you a hard, fast number. But I can tell you a little bit about how the economics works. Okay, we want to have an event down here in San Pete County, and so we start booking people and we start marketing. So you have all those costs. And then we want to sell it to, ESPN or whoever, one of the networks. They're going to pick up part of that cost, and all that comes together. But then you sell the tickets, and that the most part about that, about getting the people in there, is to sell the show. And you hopefully are going to break even at that point. But then the distributor, the station. They're going to make advertising dollars off of it. And so that's where the funds really come from. It's from the advertisers. you know, as well as the t-shirts and the popcorn. It's when it's the pay-per-view, the premier wrestling, mm-hmm. premier event, you know, your audience is paying, your viewers are paying, your advertisers are paying. And then the bottom line, they have this that they can replay again. And they can actually build up a library of these different events and say in October it gets kind of slow or Thanksgiving time. They're not going to put on an event, but they've got 12 of them that they can replay again. And that's where you start making, really making the serious money, is when it's played over and over again. I mean, that's why,
you know, I've always wondered why they'll, because Dave, don't they air, sometimes they'll air like SmackDown at like 3 a.m. or, you know, or like really late at night, they'll do the live and then sometimes it'll air again the next day or the next evening or something.
Yeah,
I've always wondered why they did that.
You'll find that for the WWE Fox channels. They do the live event on Friday Night SmackDown, but it will play several times during the week on Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2. And it's nothing but advertising revenue. You know, it's good quality programming that's going to get you a good audience share. And, you know, once again, we've talked about ratings a lot on this podcast. But anytime you can get good ratings points for any kind of program, that just translates into money for the television station, the radio station, because everything is not only driven by money, but by ratings point, how many eyes or ears are on that particular program at any time. And that's why you'll see them repeating late at night. And then also some of the programs that I watch, some of the wrestling programs that I tape on the DVR, you know, I love that old DVR. I watch the Ring of Honor program and also Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, which, you know, they air, but only maybe once or twice on a channel, but it's usually Saturday night at 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the morning, because they actually have to buy that program and buy that time from that TV station. Z Living, I think, is the name of the TV channel that Championship Hollywood is on right now, and they have to buy that programming time frame, because there's always a disclaimer that says right at the very beginning, the comments that you hear on the preceding program are not necessarily those of the management or staff at ZLiving.com. You know, they're doing that. That just means that company has bought that program, just like when you see the infomercials for the Ginsu knives late at night.
I see.
Well, and they're cheaper. That's the thing. You know, locally here, you can buy at 2 o'clock in the morning, you can buy a commercial for $30. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But yet during the news, it's good. That same commercial is going to cost you $2,500.
Right.
So.
Wow. So one thing that we're seeing, and I'm sure you can maybe help enlighten us on, Bob, is the way things are moving towards streaming platforms online. Is that going to be the way of the future? I mean, are we always going to have, or is there always going to be a place for movies, television, sporting events on your good old fashioned ESPNs or your, you know, TNTs? And I always tell Dave to get his crystal ball out, but I don't know how you tell the future, Bob. Maybe you got your tarot cards or something weird there. I don't know what, but maybe you could.
I watch tell the us what you're caterpillars.
Ah, yes.
The woolly caterpillars
in the spring. Yeah.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you're seeing in the film industry. And because I know we talked a little bit about that, about like pitching your ideas to these streaming platforms.
Well, I'll tell you, 30 years ago, a friend of mine who was a big distributor, vice president of a large distribution company, and he made the comment, he said, eventually everything will be digital. Because at that point, you go to the theater and they literally had the film and put it in a projector. And I kind of looked at him and went, oh, you think so? And I mean, he was in the know, but obviously he was right. Because theaters now, it's totally electronic. They download the program, they play it, and when their time's up, it goes away. And with the entertainment aspect, that's why libraries are really, really important, like Netflix. You know, Netflix started off just renting videos, and then it started doing its own content and buying libraries. And from what I understand, Netflix has never been profitable, but they're spending several billion dollars. But here's the thing. They have an income stream of several hundred million people who are paying them $15 a month. So that income stream is coming and coming and coming, and you've got that. CBS, I was listening today about a program where CBS and Warner's put together the CW channel. Well, Warner's is now doing more with HBO, and CBS is actually streaming with Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
And so that it looks like that whole network is going to be up for sale. Mm-hmm. Somebody can buy that and all the programming they have. And Paramount, who's been this major filmmaker and distributor for all these years, they came out and said, we're not going to make any more theater releases. Everything we do is going to be streaming. So I think what's going to happen is more and more the streaming, there may be less channels that were out there. Like, what are there, four or five ESPNs?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's four different Fox sports stations. They will be reduced and be more of a subscription base. You know, people will pay $150, $200 for a month just to have cable. But why do that when you can get the same programs through YouTube for $50 a month? And you can get Disney Plus for $15 a month. You can get Netflix for $12.50. There's all these different streaming platforms that are cheaper and are more specific. Now, the interesting thing is they have algorithms as to what you watch, and then they make suggestions based on what you watch. You know, if you like you really like the chick flick thing, you know. Like,
yes, you know me. My heart just melts, you know.
My heart goes on. How many times do you watch Titanic? Come on.
I think the last time I saw its chick flick was probably Sleepless in Seattle, and I was like 12 years old. So.
I love that show.
Well, here's a secret that I tell my students that always surprises them. Because I've been pretty athletic in my life, and I'm a pretty good-sized guy. And if I don't cry in a movie, it wasn't good. But for my wife, the bigger the guns, the more she likes it. We're totally the opposite of what you and your
funny.
Wife are saying.
Yeah, same yeah, thing
well,
with
you
me.
Know,
yeah.
Side note real quick, Dave. He doesn't announce it very much, but Bob is like a several degree black belt in, I don't know, what is it, Bob, that you martial arts you've studied?
Kempo. I have a black belt in Kempo karate under Ed Parker, who is the founder of the system.
Hmm. Wow.
I have a black belt in the manly art of fondue myself, so.
Yeah. Dave's on a seafood diet.
Yes, I'm
on,
yeah. Tell you that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So don't mess with Bob. He'll bust you up. But, you know, one thing that I didn't know that about Paramount, because, Dave, did you happen to see that kids movie that it was the monster wrestling movie that streamed on Paramount?
I don't have
and it
Paramount.
Had a lot of so there was a movie that just came out. It released last I think it was this month, earlier this month, and had a lot of WWE voices in it, Roman Reigns, Becky Lynch, and it was about these monsters, and it's monster wrestling, and and it was it was very entertaining and very good for a children. Me and my boy watched it, and we laughed our heads off through the whole thing. But I was wondering, I was like, why didn't they release that in theaters? But now it all makes sense.
Oh, it's going away. Yeah. And Bob, you made the point, we were talking about streaming services and how there will be less channels for cable TV. We've seen that already happening this year, because right at the first of the year, NBC Sports stopped broadcasting, and they moved their hockey and some of the other sporting events that were the bigger events on NBC Sports to the USA Network. So you're starting to see that attrition starting to happen now. And then I wanted to point out two things real quick, if you could just let me have a couple minutes here, because...
No, you can't have any time.
Back in the 80s, everybody started doing pay-per-views. Well, who had the most success in pay-per-views, now called the...
This is a WWE
Premier Live Event. If Vince McMahon had not had the success he had, where he bet his entire fortune on that first WrestleMania, the pay-per-view industry might not have happened the way it did. Then I complain about Vince McMahon. Vincent Kennedy McMahon, sometimes some of his business decisions I just don't understand. But years ago, he started the streaming service of the WWE Network, and he was one of the first successful streaming networks. And 2 years ago, he sold that to the NBC Peacock streaming service. And just today, it was announced that the WWE Network streaming service in Indonesia will be on Disney Plus over there, but still on Peacock here in the United States. So you're starting to see that, and wrestling has been at the forefront of those major events in the entertainment industry, and I will argue anybody on that because there is proof in the pudding there.
Well, the funny thing is ESPN, when they first started, the only thing they had was volleyball tournaments. And look where they are now, which actually they're owned by Disney along with ABC and a bunch of other things. And they're one of the few parts of Disney that's actually, or the most profitable companies that Disney had is ESPN.
Oh, really?
And it's the streaming services like you talked about, you know, the wrestling stuff. I remember Vince when he was doing that stuff and, you know, people were kind of looking at him going, are you sure about this? And this is a pretty big gamble and costing a lot of money and look where it put it. You know, it's all over the world. It's amazing to me what can happen. There's something like 96 different markets that you can take a product to and different ways of distribution to get those in there. And you think about all those, what is it, almost 9-10 million people in the world now. Even if you only have half of them watch 15 minutes of your program, you're never going to have to work another day in your life. You know, it's all about the rather than making the big bucks on one product, it's little bucks on a lot of products, and it just grows and grows.
We're in the wrong industry, Zane.
I know. What am I waiting for? Well, maybe Bob will shoot a movie in St. Pete, and I can be a breakout star in it. I'll grow my beard out for it.
I already look like Santa Claus, dude. So. Hey, Bob.
Well, go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to ask you, you made a point at the very beginning, and if you don't mind, I'm going to kind of go back to where you talk about storytelling and how the storytelling industry, when you look at it, that's what professional wrestling's doing, that's what theater does, that's what TV does, that's what the movie industry does. And I'm going to kind of take this to what I just retired in, which in radio, and I worked in radio since 1974, when I started off in high school, but it wasn't until probably about 9 or 10 years ago when I stopped thinking of myself as a radio announcer or maybe a disc jockey, and I started thinking of myself as more of an entertainer and a storyteller, because not only was I telling the story of the music, you know, introducing the songs and all that, I was telling the story of the radio station, telling the story of the advertisers, and then also telling the story basically about myself and you know, how I tied this all together, because things have changed in the radio industry so much that they now are encouraging their announcers to talk about their lives, to talk about how how their day went and whether they saw something funny at the grocery store and just doing more personal things. And I think you're seeing the feature of the storytelling is really starting to take over in all forms of entertainment right now. You got special effects, but if it doesn't have a great story, it ain't going to sell in the movies or anything.
It's amazing how important a good story is. One of my biggest gripes is I run into a lot of people who, hey, I wrote this movie over the weekend, and my buddy's got a camera, and I want to shoot it next week.
Oof.
Well, that's great if that's all you're doing, and it's a hobby. But it's when you take the time to develop it and really look at the plot points. You know, any good story can have as many as 18 or 20 very significant plot points that we all recognize, even though we don't know what they are. Because storytelling is innate in us. You know, it all goes back to the caveman when we're sitting around the campfire and the saber-toothed tiger comes out and it eats Zane, and everybody goes, whoa! Mm-hmm. And then the next time we see those bushes rattle, rather than wait to see if it's that tiger that's going to come after me, we know what it is, and we're telling our friends about it. And we've had storytelling our entire life. To me, it's storytelling is what educates us, is what entertains us, what enlightens us. It's the biggest business. I mean, entertainment and beauty are the only two businesses that never have a downturn. No matter how bad the economy is, they continue to grow because people want to look good and people want to escape. You know, even, the wrestling, it's all about escapism. If I'm in the audience and I'm watching Hulk Hogan or I'm watching Andre the Giant, I know I can do what they're doing. And that for me, that's my escapism. It's that power and that entertainment and being so physically fit and being able to do these things and be a big success and have all these people cheer for me, even though it's vicariously. And that's why I think things like wrestling are so big, because people love that storytelling and putting themselves in the story.
And people like Zane that go around doing Macho Man imitations, because you do a great Macho Man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is that good enough?
That's good enough for me, if it's good enough for you, Zane. You know, I'm pretty easy, though. And that's why we buy the T-shirts at the events. That's why we watch the shows, is because those guys and the ladies that have had the training on how to tell the story in the ring. And I find this whole conversation very fascinating.
I mean, me and Bob went to lunch, was that 2 weeks ago? And before I knew it, we had sat there for almost an hour and a half talking about movies and stuff, because the world behind the scenes is always fascinating. And I don't like to see what's on the surface. I want to know what caused the surface to happen. You know, what's going on? Why did this happen? Why, you know, why is this that way? And I don't think that there's, I mean, a lot of people that do that get behind the scenes and that want or even care. Like you said, Bob, most of the people, they just want to see somebody get smashed in the face with a steel chair, and that's entertainment to them. But you know, there's been a lot of talk lately, especially in the younger generation, about, you know, find your passion. And I believe Dave's gotten a lot of compliments on when we talk about wrestling and things like that, because we're very passionate about it, and it's not just superficial to us. And
true.
And I don't know if there's a lot of people out there that even care what goes on behind the scenes.
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting. I've been teaching an intro to film class, and it's a basic fine arts credit up at UVU. And people come in and they think all they're going to do is watch movies and that'll be it. But we get a lot deeper than that. But the thing I find fascinating is how many people, like a student yesterday came up to me and we were talking, and she said how she's invested in this. She's going into computer science, but she loves movies. She wants to know more. She wants to figure this out. She wants to see how come it takes 2 years to film a James Bond movie. You know, people like whatever they're passionate about, they want more and more and more. You know, the wrestling, you're passionate about the wrestling, so are the fans, and they want more and more and more. And so that's why they're going to lay down their $29.50 for a live premiere event.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Wow, talk about beating.
You're my kind of guy, Bob.
Segway, baby.
That's all about the segue.
Well, you know, it's been an absolute wonderful thing, you know, to talk about so much in the industry and so much of this behind the scenes stuff that's absolutely fascinating to me. And I'm pretty much out of questions. I don't know, Dave, what do you got for Bob?
Well, just one quick thing, Bob. I'd like you to tell our listeners where you teach at, and maybe if you have any social media accounts that you'd like to put out and let them know how they can find out more about you. Oh, no, maybe you don't want to. Maybe there's some law enforcement officials out there who would like to know more about you, Bob.
Yeah, you're right on that one, Dave.
Well, let's just say that the Protect a Certain program is a great thing.
Yeah.
Well, I've actually taught at three or four different schools, colleges. I helped start East Hollywood High School in Salt Lake. That was a high school based on using film and entertainment as a way to engage kids in learning. I now currently teach at UVU. We'll see for how much longer that goes. You know, there's actually a group in Park City who's looking at building a film school.
Yeah, I've heard
about
that.
I've helped them with a lot of stuff, and we'll probably be involved in that if that happens. Social media, I'm on Facebook once or twice a week, not at all like I used to be. But there is a fun picture on there, I'll tell you. I was in Africa, in Ghana, Accra, Ghana, making a movie. And wherever we went, people were always fascinated and watch you. And I was sitting on the bench while they were setting up the camera. And all these kids just came over and sat next to me. And that's the picture I use on Facebook, because these kids are just beautiful individuals. Mm-hmm. It was so neat to be with these people. I can't tell you how much I love them. But you know, that's my whole thing, is that I really feel like if we spend more time loving one another, the world will be a much better place.
And respecting one another and your opinion. So
yeah.
That's just fascinating. Yeah, yeah. I appreciate it a lot. And I hope to get to meet you someday. If not, you have an open invitation to be on this podcast anytime. Or if you even like to discuss more about storytelling, we could do that as one of my other podcasts called Radio Guy Reflections. And I'd love to go into that. That's just fascinating. It's been, one of our more interesting wrestling but not wrestling podcast. It's been fascinating.
Well, it's all entertainment, right?
Right, it is. It's a premier podcasting event.
event.
Yeah.
One of those. No, well, anytime. It's been great here.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell Bob and Dave, thank you, Bob, for taking time out of your busy life to talk to a couple of wrestling fans and tell us about everything that you've done and share some of your experience in the industry with us. And that's about all I got.
Well, you got to end it out the way you always end our podcast, Zane.
Well, I will end it that way. And Bob knows, Dave knows, everybody knows that it is a great time to be a wrestling fan.
This is TurnbuckleTrash.net.
Wrestling was an essential service.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Pro yes! wrestling from a fan's yes! perspective.
Correct!
The thoughts and opinions heard on the preceding program are not necessarily those of an intelligent human being.
Well, if you want a rematch, you aren't getting one.
This is Turnbuckle Trash.
Okay, we're going to count it down. 3, 2, 1. Are you a doctor of anything, really? Or
I'm the doctor of thugonomics, just like Mr. John Cena, because you can't see me because it's a podcast.
Yes.
And I used to work on the radio, you know?
He is a man who can resist anything but temptation. Dave, you interrupt as you need.
Or as I always do.
The one that everybody recognizes is I actually did stunts in Dumb and Dumber. So,
kind of sounds like one of our podcasts.
So is that Megan Dumber and Dumber? Is that me?
I don't know. You guys think for yourself.
Zane is dumb. I'm dumber.
I even got so excited that there was like 10 votes given. I threw my popcorn at him and booed and bought into all the hype. You know, I was going to lose that.
Climbed on top of a 12-foot ladder, stood on the top rung of the ladder where it says, "This is not a step. Don't step here. Don't do it."
A steel cup. Well, I've seen everything now.
You know, there's not a lot of 50-year-old wrestlers out there. No.
Except for Tombstone Jesus, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of 50-year-old wrestlers out there.
Except for Tombstone Jesus, right?
Yeah. If I cut you off, I'm sorry. But I'm not really that sorry.
Oh, we'll take it back, Zane. You are pretty sorry, man.
I know you really like the chick, but, you know. Like,
yeah, you know me. My heart just melts, you know.
My heart goes on. How many times have you watched Titanic? Come on.
And so that's why they're going to lay down their 29.50 for a live premiere.
Kenpo.
I have a black belt in Kenpo Karate under Ed Parker, who's the founder of the business.
Wow.
I have a black belt in the manly art of fondue myself, so. Maybe there's some law enforcement officials out there who would like to know more about you, Bob.
Yeah, you're right on that one, Dave.
This is a premiere podcast of Turnbuckle Trash.
Excellent!